feel I knock on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
I'm Julian. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Okay, first of all, please raise your hand if you have never heard Gene tell his story before. Okay, now look to the left of your chair. Is there a seatbelt there? Because if there is not, you need to put both your hands on your chair because you are about to be blown away.
Gene. I am nervous. How's everybody doing tonight? You look good? Y'all look good. Oh, my name's Gene Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Don't get mad at me. Y'all get mad if you introduce yourselves that way. My sobriety dates, I forgot. Don't worry about it. I'll get to it. October 21st, 2006. It's really good to see some of you guys. This room, NABA, is the history in this room and the role it played in my sobriety, especially early on. Just to walk back in through these doors, I get goosebumps. And to stand behind this podium for, I guess, the second or third time, when Tim asked me to do this when I had 1 year sober, it was the first time I ever gave a talk. And oh my God, I'm still nervous today. And to be here, to be able to come back, because what I learned in this room, there's so many of you men like Terry and Frank still scaring the hell out of newcomers. So many of you wonderful men that on Thursday nights especially, and Rusty, of course, that showed me the way. And I learned how, this is going to sound weird, and I'll get into the story in just a second. I'll try not to keep us too long. But I actually learned how to have a meal with other human beings in the NABA clubhouse. I was so isolated and alone, and if I did eat, and when I did decide to eat just out of necessity, it was always alone. I had drank and used myself into absolute solitary living. And when I got here, when TJ and Glenn brought me over to NABA from Peachtree Corners, and we'll get to all of that, I came in on a Thursday night men's meeting where on that row right there was about 4,000 years of sobriety, and they would look down their nose at you and they'd bet, and they probably still do that today. And there was these men like Bob and Ray Ray out here, and oh, Steve Orr, all these wonderful sober men, intensely, you know, for years. And you would just listen to them, and I didn't understand all of everything they were saying, but one thing I knew, that these men had known each other for years and years and years, and that they were comfortable in their own skin, and they exhibited what sobriety was supposed to look like, and they were such great teachers. And they took me in, and they let me eat with them down there before the meeting on Thursday nights, where you guys, I hope you still do that. And they took interest in my life, and they gave me the best gift ever. I didn't even know that I was getting it when I got it, and it was the privilege of being the coffee maker for 1 year over here. They said, Gene, they pulled me aside, and they said, look, buddy, we've been watching you. It doesn't look good. Let's try this. Here's our record with that, is that the guy that we let make coffee, if he'll do that for a year, that guy never goes back out. He never drinks again. But you're a special case. We're going to probably need you to do that for 2 years. And I did. So October 21st, 2006 was not my first white chip, though. Unfortunately, I am a habitual violator in recovery. That's the best way I know how to describe it. My first meeting was in 1992. I was 22 years old. I'm 45 now. And that was at the 8111 Club over there in Roswell. And I did not wake up at 22 years old and go, you know what? I'm 22. Things aren't working out. I think A&A is going to be a good idea. I had driven by that place forever and ever and ever, not knowing what that club was. But there was a very, very kind judge that I had the honor of standing in front of for multiple times that sentenced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went in with my little sheet of paper. I don't know if you guys had ever had those sheets of paper to get signed to prove that you had gone to AA, but he gave me one of those and a job to get that all filled out. And he sentenced me to 8111. And that was my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And it was at 10 o'clock at night, and it was in the dark. And I learned the very first thing I needed to learn about AA, especially ones where they turn the lights out, is that I can come in late, I can do what I have to do, I can get my sheet signed and get out of there early, and then I will just comply for as long as I can. I won't do what's asked of me, and I will expect you to fix my problems, give me a girlfriend, a job, and a place to live. And when you guys don't do that, I'll drink at you, and I'll blame AA for not working. That's what I did. So, if you get anything out of this talk tonight, get this. Some of the finest people in the world are in Atlanta, Georgia, being sober tonight. And they've all had a part. All of you guys had such a part in helping me out. And understand this. When we get into it, we talk about the work. When I did the work that's outlined in this big book, when I did it absolutely verbatim by how the text said and when the timing of the steps were to be applied, I got well. That is it and that is all. That is a little bit controversial with some people. Some people say, take your time to do the work. Do what you want to do. Tonight's going to be my experience. This is what worked for me. And it's how I sponsor today. It works well for them as well. I was born in Texas, and I'm a recovering Texan. And my, my friends in Texas are always talking about how great. Hey, boy, I can't believe you ever left Texas. Texas got everything in the world. You ever got to have Texas? Texas. Those guys have never left Texas. And I try to explain to them there's a lot more going on out there. But I left Texas with a resentment at 10 years old. My parents moved here to Atlanta in 79-80, and I was a little bit different, like you guys all felt. You know, you always have that little thing going on inside where you don't feel just right and blah, blah, blah. And a couple of years later, my mom decided to take me out of school to keep me away from the bad crowd over at Norcross High School to move me over to Greater Atlanta Christian or Greater Atlanta Correctional, you choose. And to keep me away from the bad crowd. But what she didn't understand was that her son was the bad crowd. And the first drinking deal, the first experience with the alcohol, and right around 14, 15 years old, I had a very good buddy and was come over to my house. My parents were having a little dinner party with a couple other couples, and one of the couples had a girl our age that came over. We're all friends, and my buddy had brought over a little bit of a fruit jar. He'd gotten into his daddy's liquor cabinet, got some brown liquor, and stole it and brought it over to this dinner party. And the three of us, him and I and this girl, wonderful people, we hit the streets passing that bottle of fruit jar bottle around liquor. We had no idea what was going to happen. We weren't really drinkers at that time. And all of these internal things that I've been experiencing, being uprooted and different and blah, blah, blah. You know that whole story. When I drank, something happened that probably didn't happen to these guys. But one was, when I first sipped this stuff, you guys remember your first drink ever? Does anybody remember your first one? I remember my first one like it was yesterday. Does anybody in here remember the first Coca-Cola? Nobody does. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I drank this stuff for the first time, it was awful. It tasted terrible. I didn't like it. And a few minutes later, that feeling, that elusive feeling that hit me where my face got hot, I got funnier, and I'm more attractive to this girl. And my close personal friend Joe was with me, and we had solved the world's problems in about an hour and a half and returned to my parents' home. Just walked in the door, didn't realize that we were 3, 14, 15-year-old kids and looked hammered, because we were. And we stopped this party. Everybody got whoopings. All of us went to bed or got sent away, and we all were sick. We did the whole thing, and everybody woke up the next morning with a firm resolution not to do that. One of us didn't, and that's me, and that's why I'm here tonight. Because what had happened was, as bad as that experience was, when I drank, I got a feeling that I had never had before in my life. And it solved something that was going on inside of me. I don't know how you alcoholics feel about yourselves. And I don't know what your relationship with alcohol is. My relationship with alcohol was that it was a solution. It was the party. It was what you did on Saturday night. It became what you did on Sunday morning, Monday. And it just became this thing that was a constant in my life. It was just a constant. It was always there. And I didn't know what to do when it wasn't there, because I didn't know how to act in this world without this. And when I have this, I'm okay. When I don't have this, I'm not okay. Has anybody tried to stop drinking on their own? I can do that for a while. But what happens to me is when I stop drinking on my own is I start coming apart at the seams. Things start happening to me mentally. I can't handle the pressures of life. I can't get the bills paid. She's not listening. And all of these things go on and on and on. And man, if you had my problems, you'd need a drink too. And just to get to the record, I've had 5 DWIs in Georgia. I've had one in another state. I've been to 22 some odd aftercares or treatment facilities. I've been thrown out of every freaking place I've ever rented, and none of that. I've busted relationships, fired from jobs, alcohol-related offenses. Not any of that makes me alcoholic. Not any of it makes me alcoholic. I used to think that stuff made me alcoholic. Oh, if you did these things, you're an alcoholic. I'm a poor driver when I drink and I get caught. I don't understand. We didn't have Uber, and I don't like to spend money on taxis because I fall asleep in the back of them and they don't know where I'm going, and I've got to get my truck back to the house, so I usually get in trouble for that. What makes me alcoholic, and what I found out, and when somebody finally pulled me aside and said, "Can you control the amount of alcohol you take every time you drink?" And I said, "Well, let me see. I can do about, you know." They said, "No, buddy. Every single time you drink, can you control the amount? Can you go out and have 2 or 3 beers? Not once in a while. Not 5 out of 10 times. Not even 9 out of 10 times. Can you do it every single time?" And when you're not drinking, what's going on? What's going on when you're not drinking? Are you arranging your life to be around alcohol? Are you thinking about not drinking and drinking anyway? Have you made a decision on Friday to get home with your paycheck and end up coming home on Sunday broke? Have you done these things? Have you made a firm resolution not to do it again, but do it again? Have you done that? Like, yeah. He says, "Well, welcome to AA. I don't need the pamphlet anymore." That's right there on the first page of We Agnostics, and I never knew that. And I learned these things here. I learned these things through your experience. What I understand now, and I didn't understand then, I am bodily and mentally different than my fellows when it's in relation to alcohol. And I was frustrated by that simple fact all my life. Moving from Texas and going into a different school and changing environments and going to college and getting thrown out of college and doing all of these things, I arranged my life to be around this booze. In college, if you go to the big school, well, there's booze everywhere. And here's the problem with that. College is great, and if you indulge in the booze for too long, you don't get to go to college anymore, so you have to go get a job. So when you're thrown out of that, what do? Well, you go find a job. Well, if an alcoholic needs a job, what's the most logical next step? Bartender, that's right. Some of my brothers are in the house tonight. And that's what happened. Right up the street from here, that's what happened. I was working at a record store because I love music. And I was over at Peachtree Corners. You've gone over where that's at. And there's nothing out there. And this is way back in the day. And I'm a kid. I'm in my teenage years. And I used to drive one of them Schwinn 10-speed bicycles. And yeah, man, so we all had one. Banana seats. And I would work for 5 records a week. We had records, some of you young people. That's before CDs and cassette tapes. It was record albums. And the 5 albums were great. And that was, you know, I'd do that for a few bucks. And then in this same little strip center was a bar that you'd open the door to. And I didn't know it was a bar. I was driving my bike by it, and there was this guy with a neat accent. He was French-Canadian, but I didn't know at the time. He might have been Chinese. For might have been, "Hey, Craig, what are you doing?" And I said, "No, I'm not doing anything." And the man asked me if I wanted to make $20, which was a boon for someone like me. And I said, "Yeah, what do I got to do, man?" And he goes, "Come in here and stock some beers in this cooler over here, and I'll give you $20. Take you about an hour." And he had cases of these long neck bottles of beer. And the place was called the Derby. And yes. Oh, yeah, y'all heard. You've heard about that. The Derby's great because when you open the door, it's the first one they ever had. And I know they're going to find me and track me down and beat me for always talking about them from the podium. But you open the door in the bright daylight, and it's dark, and the darkness rushes out of the Derby, and it just envelops. Whatever's outside gets dark. It's like, and you step onto the carpet, which is like a sponge. And there's a smell of pine sol and urine and failure and broken dreams wafts through and permeates through as you walk in. And your eyes adjust to the light. There's 3 old drunks that never leave. They're always there. And Scott Jed, and he's probably dead, Norm, and these other guys. And they're always, they were staples there for years. And aside to that story, I went in sober after I'd been like 4 or 5 years sober. I went in to grab a sandwich or something. I was in the neighborhood. They were still there. And they, I go, "Hey, guys, how's it going?" They go, "Gene, it's been a couple of weeks since I've seen you. Sober 5 years. I hadn't been in here. You guys are still here. A couple of weeks." Alcohol is a great thief of time, isn't it? And anyway, I walked into this and I had arrived. I had arrived. I make jokes about it, but I felt, man, I got to stock these beers. I got a little bit of money. And I did this for a couple of days in a row and a couple of weeks in a row. And then about a month I was into this and I stayed a little bit longer than I may have should have. And that door opened up and all that darkness flooded out and all this light came in and these two dudes walked in. I love big personalities. I love people that get the attention. I like the alpha dog, man. These two cats walked in and all of a sudden all these girls walked in behind them and all of a sudden the music got a little bit louder and these cats were talking and telling jokes and then all these other guys came in behind them and saddled up at the bar, and these two guys walked around the stick, and they were the bartenders. They were the rock stars. They were the men. And they go, "Hey, boy, what are you doing here?" I said, "I stock beers in the afternoon, and my name's Gene," or whatever. They go, "Well, you want to work tonight? You want to make some money, and you want to get down with us, man? Have a good time. Now, stay over there and do what we tell you. It's all going to turn out all right." 4 o'clock in the morning later, I'm hammered with money. Money. Those are my first two sponsors. All the girls liked them. Every day was payday. They were in control of the poison that I needed to be alive. None of these things I knew at the time. And man, there, once I discovered that, all bets were off. All bets were off. I had access to the power. And when I have access to the power and I've got other people that need the power, I become all powerful. I learned real quick how to manipulate people, real quick how to be funny, real quick to part you from your cash to make it my cash to go get what I need. And somebody came in a little bit after that and enhanced all that alcohol with additives. Don't want to break tradition yet. We'll get to it. We'll get there. I know Nava's tradition. I ain't going to hurt your feelings yet. Let me tell you something about that, though, guys. When you have the physical allergy that the Big Book describes of once I start, I cannot stop and I cannot control the amounts I take and I have instant access to this stuff, this magic that I have to have. Once that begins and all of a sudden the mental obsession, that thing in my mind that tells me not to do it, but I do it anyway, and all of the fear and the doubt and the self-image and all blah, 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 all that adds up and I am on, things start to happen. The mind gets convoluted. The consequences come. The consequences come. You wake up in places you didn't intend to wake up. You end up on sidewalks. You get in fist fights that you lose constantly. You break relationships. You have good intentions. You make all that money, but nothing gets paid. You live in an apartment where there's no furniture. You eat when you have to. And then you try to stop. You ever try to stop? Just stop. By God, that's a DWI. I don't want to do that again. Woo! $1,400 in probation. I'm done drinking. Tick, tick, tick. I ain't going to drink tonight. Tick, tick. Whew. Man, I really wish that girl hadn't left. I liked her. Man, we were close, man. I loved her. Tick, tick. What am I going to do? I'm bored. Tick, tick. This sucks. I'm scared. I'm, you know, tick. Like, I ain't drinking, by God. Whew, I'm going to call my mom again. Ain't nobody else want to talk to me. She's asleep. Tick. Tick. All right, just one. It'll be all right. I'll get a ride home. Been there? What about you ladies? Don't have to go out to the bars to do it, do you? And the housewives want to sit at home with the kids? Tick. Some bitch husband. He's a good. Tick. I'm so tired of that PTA meeting I have to go. Why didn't he go? Tick, tick. I got a little Xanax. Tick, tick. I need a Lunesta. Tick, you know. That thing that makes me different will kill me. I'm terminally unique. That's an AA buzzword. We always have our own language in AA, don't we? Terminally unique. I'm so different. Every one of us is a misunderstood artist. Every one of us, nobody gets. Oh, my God, everything's a disaster, and every one of us has a plan. I know. I tell you, man, with no coping skills and the things adding up in my mind, it gets to be real bad real quick. And here's what happens to an alcoholic like me if you do the other stuff to go with it. The highs are too high. The lows are too lows. I can't hold a job. I can't keep any money. If you read page 52, and I hate people that quote pages in the big book, but on page 52, if you look on that thing about those agnostic promises or the bedevilments where I can't have a good relationship and I can't hold it together and I'm of no use to anything else, things start to happen. And Gene Russell becomes to a place where I can't live with it and I can't live without it and I want to stop and I can't. My parents won't talk to me anymore. There is no girl. And none of it's going right. Here's what I do. I make a plan. I can't run anymore. And I just want it to stop. So maybe I'll do a little bit more than I used to. Or maybe I'll just... I get to the jumping off place. Has anybody been to the jumping off place where you just want the noise to stop in your head? That's what it used to be like for me. And you've asked me to come here and tell you what I used to be like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. But this went on and on, tedious, laboriously, for years, until I was asked to leave the state by the same judge that had asked me to go to 8111. And so I'm standing there once again. My dad got me the lawyer. I'm in a bunch of trouble. And he goes, if you can get out of here, get out of here. And I won't have to put you in jail for 5 years on felony charges. And so my grandparents had passed away. They lived in a place called Crystal Beach, which is a very cleverly named place. And don't want to break tradition, but I didn't name it. And so... And it's in Galveston County. And there's only one real good reason to go down there, and it's to get away from everything. There's like the bikers are all the banditos, and I don't know anything about that culture. And there's America's Most Wanted runaways are out there. And five of those guys got caught in 1 year, and it's a trailer park on stilts. And I've got this house where my grandparents used to live, and it's been empty for a number of years. And that's my escape route. Dig, I can go there and not get felony charges. And so I get shipped off there. My dad gives me $500 cash of his money. I take my truck. He drives me down there. No driver's license. His son, don't understand you. Good luck with that. So, you know, I'm down there in this place. I'm going to start a business. Of course, that's what we do. Start a business. And, well, y'all started some businesses? It's a good idea, right? I live on the beach. May as well be a fisherman. Duh. I can drink all day. So I was a commercial fisherman. I tell that to everybody. You're a commercial fisherman? It's not like you fall off the boat in Alaska and you're dead. You fall off the boat in Galveston, you just stand back up, get back in. That's like, water easy. He's overboard. He's up. He's down. Oh, he's get in the boat. Anyway. So I did that, and I bartended for a while, and the internal condition was... And all the while, guys, I need to tell you, my first meeting was in 1992. I'm getting in all this trouble, and here's what I'm doing. I'm going to these AA meetings because I'm always on probation. And pretty soon I'm going to these AA meetings because, you know what? I know there's a solution there, but I don't have access to it. And you know what else I'm doing in these AA meetings? I'm going to them and showing up and wanting a solution to the problem I have. I don't want to be suicidal anymore. I want this madness to stop. I want to be able to... You know what I wanted you to do? I want you to teach me how to drink and do dope. Like a gentleman. I wanted to be able to control and enjoy this thing that I had discovered. But it had gotten so far out of control, and I could not control it, and I could not enjoy it, and I was mixed up inside. And the harder I tried to stop, the more I did it. And I'm stuck down in nowhere-ass Texas, and there's one AA meeting. It's a little Methodist church down there, and they had four or five people that attended that meeting regularly and two other stragglers, me being one of them. And those four or five people have been sober since before Bill Wilson. And I love those people. And I met there's probably about five, six of them. And they were old timers, and they were just beautiful. And they would, man, they were just so caring, and they tried to help me, and they knew they'd watch me come in on Thursday nights. And they told me this, and they had, and I tell this part of my story, and everybody gets mad at me because I'm hating on them. I'm not hating on them. But here was the message I got. If you come in here, Gene, we love you. Thank you. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's some coffee. Just have a seat. We're going to read out of the morning meditation book, and we're going to discuss that for an hour. And if you come to our meeting religiously for 1 year, we're going to get you a sponsor. One of us will sponsor you after a year, and then we're going to work a step a month. We're going to work one step a month, and then and after that, you'll be able to work with others. Can y'all do the math? That's 2 years. That's a long time for someone like me when I can't get 2 hours. 2 days, 2 minutes. Tick, tick, tick. And then, let me tell you something. I tried to comply. I wanted to help. I wanted to be part of. I liked them. I admired them. But I could not stop on my own. I wanted to. I'd wake up in the morning knowing the meeting was going on, and I'd be around Crystal Beach, fiddle farting around, trying to work, trying not to drink all day. You know how hard it is to just not drink if you're a real alcoholic? I'm dying. I love those people. You think I like drinking 22-ounce Budweisers in the stupid parking lot before the meeting? By the way, I like to share when I do that. One thing led to another. I met a girl. We had one little visit. And we got pregnant. And she disappeared. And I always thought it'd be nice to be a dad. But I don't know what's going on now. And then I met another girl. Did you know that if you take my booze away, the girls are the solution to my problem, and that I need the Holy Trinity in order to get well? You know what the Holy Trinity in A&A is? The girl, the job, and the place to live. If you get all three of those, then I'll manage my addictions. I won't want to drink like I used to. You guys never would provide that for me. I met a little girl. She came on over, and she worked at the marina over by where I lived, and she was beautiful, married, but beautiful. And very difficult amends. And the guys, I'm going to tell you this story because I don't want to break tradition, but it's part of my experience. And guys, you need to know what's going on. And she had a little tinfoil and some garbage in it and a little lighter. And she said, "Here, I'm going to light this up and you inhale this. And I'm going to split and go to work." And you got to understand, she came into my home to do this. This is not a home like you go home and your home's nice and clean and straight. No, this is an alcoholic's home. There's dead chicken wing bones everywhere, and laundry, and I think there's a midget. I don't know. It's horrifying. She comes in here, and she does this, and I do this, and I go, "Man, you know, I don't really see what you see, and I don't feel anything." And she leaves, and she goes, "I'm going to come by after my shift and check on you." And 8 hours later, she comes on back, and my house is spotless. It is. And I am naked as a jaybird, baby. I'm, woo, clean that up. I don't know what you did, but I don't know why you do that. I don't feel anything. There's nothing wrong here. When she did that, guys, I was drinking a beer. I'll never forget it in my life. I was drinking a beer, like, and it was like this much in it. When she came back, there was this much in it. There's a solution. I only tell you this to tell you what's coming up. You stay up for this many days in a row, and you don't eat, and you continue to drink, and you don't do anything else. The insanity comes back. The crazy people come in. You're in the spirit world. All this nonsense happens, and you just want out, and it culminated in a suicide attempt. Yeah, this is where it gets a little hard and dicey. Crazy people had taught me how to do that a different way, and I got where the pain couldn't. I couldn't take it anymore. And somebody came in and rigged me up, and I took a bunch of pills, and I planned it out. I got that good vodka. I saved all my money up and got me some pop-off vodka. And ate a bunch of pills, did a bunch of dope, drank a bunch of booze, and out I go. And when you take that much upper and that much downer and you don't die, you just talk into the light sockets in your underwear, and you look like an idiot, but you have a stroke, and they... If you want crazy people out of your house, this is how you do it. You do that, you fall out, and then they all leave. That works every time. And they dialed 911 before they left, and they took me to the crazy bin over in Galveston. And one thing led to another. I said, "You need to go behind this door." And I said, "I know what's behind this door. I ain't going." "Well, you need to go to AA." "I'm not going there either. It doesn't work." I called my mom. She finally talked to me. My mom's a quick study. I said, "Mom, I'll do anything you ask. I'll do anything. I want this madness to stop." She goes, "Well, if you don't go to the hospital, what are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to go home." I had $6. I could have got maybe a ride for $6. I got a beer and walked over across the ferry. Because that's the only thing that would work. I said, "I'll go to anywhere you tell me if they don't do Alcoholics Anonymous." And when you're laying there and you're dying, And that's the relief. You know, something we talk about in these rooms all the time is hope, right? And hope to me has never been very important to me until it was gone. I didn't understand how vital or life-sustaining hope is. I had no moral compass whatsoever. I was drinking to live and living to drink. And I can't come to your stupid rooms anymore because it doesn't work. And I felt like that if I did that, something might happen. But the access to that was blocked by well-intended members. Doesn't mean I didn't love them. It just means they were misinformed for my case. So when my mom studied and studied hard, she turned on Dr. Phil. You heard of Dr. Phil? Dr. Phil's talking about a treatment facility over out in Texas. I'm in Texas. There's a treatment facility in Texas. I said, well, hell, there's a good, perfect fit. Don't do A&A there. That's what she told me. One thing led to another. I'm in the hill country in Texas at a place called La Hacienda. And my brother and her corralled me up, and I go out to La Hacienda. And I go, where are we going, Mama? She said, La Hacienda. I said, what's that? Mexican food? I love Mexican food. Not a restaurant, treatment facility. 3 days later, I'm 120 pounds. I'm still what I am. I'm just a wreck. I get through the ICU. I get a little syllabus thing of all the rehab instructions, and I shuffle down to the big room like this. And it's big. It's bigger than this. And there's a podium like this and a little coffee table. And there's a big dry erase board with a little snowman on it. Look like a snowman. And this stuff here, 12 steps and 12 traditions. And I sat way in the back where Tinsley's at, and I sat in the back and I went, oh, nah, you tricked me. You tricked me, you sons of... This man walks out, his life-changing event happens. I didn't know who he was. He didn't know who I was. We had to scratch out a little tale of woe on some notepaper before all this, and this had a couple hundred people in this room, and this guy walks up, and he had the standard issue Texas outfit. He had some busted old Levi's, he had one of them red t-shirts, his hair is this whatever, and he had an eye patch. I'll never forget the eye patch. And he's exasperated. He just, oh shit, he's going through and he's calling some kind of roll, and I'm listening, and I'm like, man, you know, I'm still tripping. And Gene Russell, where you at? Here? Well, welcome, buddy. Dang, man. You know, just, we got right here, man. We got a seat just for, man, right here in the front. Get on up here, man. All right, Gene. He's like, I'm good. He said, excuse me? I said, with all due respect, I'm fine. He goes, buddy, I don't think you understand. We invited you to come sit up here in this good seat, and you can hear everything. Man, we want you to be here. Man, we're glad you're here. Why don't you come on? Just come on up, why don't you? I said, I'm not coming up. I'm good. I'm good. He goes, oh, yeah. Okay, well, why don't you leave? I said, excuse me? He goes, well, you heard me. Why don't you get out? There ain't no locks on the door here. I invited you up here. You said no. There's a whole lot of people that'd love to have this seat right now. Why don't you go and get on down the road? By the way, buddy, I got your little deal here. It's a long walk back to Crystal Beach, Texas. Why don't you go ahead and go? I go, I don't understand. He goes, well, what's your problem? I go, what? He goes, you got a problem. I don't know what made me say this, and I'll never forget it. I'm so glad I said what I said. I go, that stuff on the wall there, buddy, it doesn't work. I'm different. He goes, oh yeah? Doesn't work, does it? Let me ask you a few questions. Genius? He called me a genius. He goes, have you ever admitted to yourself you were alcoholic and your life was unmanageable? You ever come to believe in a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity? Have you ever made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God if you understood Him? Have you ever made a moral, a searching inventory of yourself, searching out through greater defects of character, and done that under the guise of a sponsor, admitted to yourself, to God, and someone else, nature of your problem? Have you become willing to take this information and have God remove these horrible defects of your character? Have you even thought about being willing to straighten out the past? Because I know you got a past. You ever make personal inventory when you're wrong, promptly admit it? Have you sought through prayer and meditation, a conscious contact with the God of your understanding? And better yet, you turd. He was yelling. Have you taken this information? Have you shared it with a newcomer to help them get better from their problem? Because here, buddy, what your little note here says is you've been coming to my fellowship all of your life and you've been taking. You come in here and you expect us to fix your problem, but you haven't done the work. You haven't put pen to paper. You just come in here and bitch about everything, but you don't do anything. And you blame us for your failures. You don't have the God-given right to come in here and tell me this doesn't work because you haven't done it. What have the audacity and the arrogance of you? Tell me the truth. What have you done? Have you done this? And I replied, to the best of my ability. And he's like, get out! Get out of my room right now. To the best of my ability, my foot. He, buddy, get up here or be gone. And what that man's voice resonated into my soul. He reached into a place nobody had ever spoken to me before like that. He told me the truth. He loved me enough to tell me the truth. And we don't do that anymore, do we? Because we're too afraid they're going to use again. You know what, kids? They're going to use anyway. You better love somebody enough to tell them the truth because people's lives hang in the balance. I get to go to bed every night. If I don't tell the truth, it's on me. That man was not rude to me. That man told me what I needed to hear the way I could hear it. And he sprinkled in some adjectives. My 120-pound narrow behind got in that seat. And he said, buddy, here's how this is going to go. If you really want to be done for good and for all, do you? Do you want to? Do you want this insanity and this chaos to end? Here's a little something for you, dumbass. Do you want a bank account? How about a driver's license with your picture on it and an address you can be found at? Huh? You ain't got one of those, do you? Lack of power being our dilemma? How about some power? Power to pay your bills? Power to get into a decent relationship? Power to get out of a bad one? We don't have that power, do we, AA people? Get into them all the time. I can't get out of this. Sponsor. The book says we do this work next, at once, immediately. We do not wait. We do not hesitate. We don't sit on our... The chapter's into action, not into wait. What are you doing now? Oh, I got to wait. I got to do a step. I'm working on my second step. What does that mean? Working on my second step. Came to believe. I hear it all the time. Who have you helped today? I was taught what real AA was, what they did back in the day. They didn't screw around with you back then. You had to be sponsored into these meetings. You had to be wanting to get better. And if you were just playing around, then leave. Come back when you're ready. We love you. It's not mean. It's not militant. The book says that. When people argue with me all the time about this, I go, well, the book says this. Well, I know the book better than you. Then do it. Or you're doing it your way. I don't care. This is what happened for me. And I get into these long-winded debates in AA parking lots all over the country because I'm the thumper. It saved my life. I sponsored the other way. Why does he keep relapsing? He hasn't made any amends. Guys, let me tell you something. I needed some advice. I got shipped back out here to Atlanta. Some things have gone wrong. We're running out of time. I got a few minutes with you. I got to tell you about what the book talks about. The best years of my existence lie ahead. That tend to be true in my experience. I thought, who came into these rooms half baked, burned to the crispy core, pitiful, incomprehensible demo to the nth degree, and said this to themselves? Well, I guess the party's over. I'm going to be bored. Freaking distended liver. This is not fucking AA. I'm not doing it. That's what I did.
I'm going to be bored.
You know this guy that took me? I went to a meeting out there, and the guy took me to one of these meetings out there, and they went around the room, and they talked about hope. We weren't allowed to share. They talked about how their lives had changed. Guys, they talked about going through some terrible problems, man. There were some guys in there going through a divorce, and heard this, man. I don't go to meetings to share my problems, but this guy said this thing, and I just remembered it the other day because I'm having a real tough time with some personal parts of my life. This guy said, "You know, I'm going through a divorce, man, and it's just kicking my ass right now. And I've been sober for a couple of years now, and I'm just heartbroken." I was talking to my sponsor the other day, and he took me to this place in the 12 and 12, and he said this part about you, and he started talking about the solution to the problem he was having. See, when I get to hurting, I drink at you. When things are going on in my head, I'll get up first thing in the morning and Rusty will hurt my feelings over at the Biscayne Room and I'll drink Jaeger at him all day long. Hope he'd die. I came back to Atlanta and I was allowed to stay at my parents' house. I'm in my 30s now. I ain't like, you know, don't have a driver's license. I walk over there. Peachtree Corners, met some people, made it to Napa, got up here with you guys, made it over to Biscayne, made it over to the Mars Men's Workshop thing over there. They did a Big Book Comes Alive. They read the Big Book, Joe and Charlie Stiles, Larry Scott and Christian, man, and all of us yahoos were in there trying to get sober, and we started learning this book and unlocking what this book said, and my life just changed. I had no idea that the answer was in here. I had no idea. The more I read it, the more I became just, oh my God, it's blown away by it. And I was in this room one night and I needed to get a sponsor. And my God, man, I had a buddy of mine and he had come in here and he ran in here. His name's Danny. And y'all might know Danny. He's my sponsor still today. And he became my sponsor because he's going to kill me if they record this and he hears this shit. I'm sitting right over there where Frank's at. And I needed a sponsor real bad. And Danny runs into the room, and he had socked this guy in the nose in his office, right? And Ray or somebody's up here leading the discussion for Thursday night. It's real quiet. And it's the men's meeting, and Danny stops the whole meeting. Goes, "Oh, God, I hit this guy. I'm going to get fired from my job. I just got to get this off my chest." And the discussion leader stops. And Danny is freaking out. Just, "Oh, God, you don't understand. I punch this dude, and it's just bad. I might be in trouble with the law." And I'm in my mind going, "That's him. That's..." praying. And so he was so freaked out in the parking lot. I go, "Hey, listen, man, I know it's going bad right now, but I really need a sponsor." He's like, "What?" He told me to call him tomorrow. He didn't have any sponsees. And he wasn't sure he knew how to do it. And he said he'd stop being my friend. He'd be my sponsor. Because he cared more about me staying alive than he cared about being my friend. And he's held me accountable for 8 years. Next month will be 9. He's my best friend. He knows me, man. He knows all them dark places. He's crazy as a tick. And I'm dead without him. And you can find those kinds of people in here. Guys, you got to understand what happened. I'm an uneducated man, and I've been thrown out of all these schools, and I wanted to get my education right. And I'm down here with NABA, and I'm going to these meetings, and I got a sponsor who tells me things like, I'm like, "Listen, Danny, I'm thinking about going back to college. You need to go to college." And I'm like, "All right, I want to go to Georgia." And he goes, "You're too stupid to go to Georgia. You need to go to UCLA. And I go, "UCLA, I like that. I'm going to UCLA. I'm going to try that." He goes, "Yeah, university closest to Lawrenceville. It's called Gwinnett Tech." And so I would return... I would return to Texas and And I'm trying to get my education. I'd go back to Texas, and I'd made peace with that place where all those bad things had happened, and the little beach house started getting worked on, and I started loving it down there, and that little AA meeting became stronger, and it was just a thing I would go down in the summers, and I'm about a couple years into this deal getting sober, right, I'm going down there, and just spend a couple of months and work on my place, and my mom calls me. I'm in Alabama, and she said, son, you might want to turn around. There's a hurricane out there. It looks like it's heading your way. I said, I've been through a bunch of those. Don't worry about it. And I got a little bit closer. I moved into Mississippi, and Hurricane Ike was really getting big. And I was like, well, I better turn on around. This is probably bigger than I need to fool with. And there's some friends down there, some AA, some good people. And Hurricane Ike came in there and blew me away. And I lost everything I owned that night, my business, my boat, my clothes, my building. It's all gone. And you know, I watched it on TV. They televised that shit. And it hurt. And I got out of my sponsor's direction really bad one time. I got one of those relationships you shouldn't have been in. And that had gone south. And I was hurting from that. And some things were going on. But I was mad. And I lost everything. And it was around October, about this time of year, and I had the resentment bigger than Texas, and I walked into the Biscayne room, and I was going to go drink, and I was going to come tell y'all I was going to go drink. My men's meeting I go to over at Biscayne's on Monday night, but I figured I was going to make my big pre-announcement at the 6 o'clock prior to that. And there's old-timers in these rooms that they'll love you enough to tell you the truth. And so I was due to pick up my chip, and I told you all that it was what y'all had told me was a big lie, and that I was hurting really bad inside. You didn't tell me I didn't sign up for this kind of stuff, and I hate every one of you people, not as a group, individually. I hate you. I've been thinking about it. And I wish you'd all just had saved your breath. There's an old-timer in that room. He had one of these. You know what this is here, y'all? He had one of these. It's not a crime to carry one to a meeting, you know. And Rusty Jones said to me, "Ding!" As he cracked the book open, he said, "Here's the how and why of it. You've got to experience the sober bottom. This is the process inside of the process. Here's the how and why of it. We had to quit playing God because it didn't work. And by the way, alcoholics don't go to AA meetings and announce they're going to drink. They just drink." And he said, "If you want to talk about your problems, I'll meet with you after the meeting. But for the rest of the meeting, we're going to talk about the topic." You see what he did? He held his responsibility to his group. He didn't let it get off track. He was a sober member. He was appropriate. He dressed me down accordingly. He told me to have a seat. "I'll be right with you. Don't leave quite yet. You ain't going anywhere. We know what you're doing." I hated him. He saved me. And I don't... What he told me will stick with me for the rest of my life. He said, "It's bad right now, but for the first time in your life, you started seeking a spiritual solution, though you don't realize what you just did. And if you continue to do that, and you be honest about what's going on inside of you, these people will never let you down. However, you tend to let them down quite often. And it ain't about that, Gene." God, I hate that. I'm not parking lot out there. Every one of you. Ain't about that, Gene. For years. Still, it's not about that. And I lived to see another day. And you gave me permission to hurt. You gave me permission to be real. I stopped hiding behind the big book, and I started trying to live by what it says to do. I want this to permeate into me. I want to be what this book says. my life's better when I have a God in it. I don't. The obsession to drink hasn't come back. And after I lost my home and that insurance company didn't give us any money, I was flat ass broke with a resentment. And I got a sponsor. I told you about Danny. I go, Danny, I'm going to kill that SOB. I don't mean hurt him. I'm going to kill him. He said, that's a good plan. You ought to kill him. He robbed you. You really want to get him back? And I was like, yeah, I want to get him back, Danny. I'm loading up. Got a gun and everything. Got a plan. We always have plans. He goes, all right, buddy, check this out. Let's get him this way. I said, all right. He goes, you give me 2 more minutes of your time, and I'll cut you loose. You go kill his ass. I said, all right. He goes, all right. You got that little construction management degree from UCLA over there? I was like, yep, yep, got that. He goes, all right, buddy. Here it is. I want you to go over there to the State Department of Insurance here in Texas and Georgia, and you find out what it takes to be an insurance claims adjuster like that guy. I go, okay, all right, why? And he goes, well, you're an idiot, right? And I was like, well, yeah. And he goes, go get you an insurance adjusting license, and you become an insurance adjuster like him. And here's something you need to know. This resentment with this storm blowing your house away, people that don't live on the coast, their houses don't get blown away like that. You live next to the coast, it's apt to happen. Your money's never going to come back. That money is gone. But here's what you do, and here's what you guys taught me, and this is what he showed me. You're not going to get your money back. Go help them get their money back. Because you've got you some experience now, right? You got something that they can teach you now, right? You can empathy. Getting into the other man's boots and looking at it through his eyes. Go help some people with this bad experience. That's what you do in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So Hurricane Sandy blows up into the Northeast. Catastrophe. New York City, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, blown to smithereens, water everywhere, on the news, what a deal. Sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and licensed insurance claims adjuster, Gene Russell, gets blown up into there, into that catastrophe to start helping people. And every one of those people in New Jersey, New York said, you don't understand what this feels like. You don't know what's happened to me. You don't get it. And I go, I do. I got the pictures right here. This happened to me down there. And they taught me so much. They taught me to be aware. You guys taught me to open my vision. Every one of those people that I would climb on their roofs out there, I'd go out there and I'd climb on their roofs. And they would point to New York where the tower stood. I don't know why they did it. I didn't ask them. They would just go, you know, that's where the towers used to be. And I'd go to the next house. That's where the towers used to be. Right over there. That's where they used to be. And I just kind of downplayed it. I didn't understand what was happening. I didn't understand what they were telling me. It was the most important lesson I've ever learned in my life. And my buddy, Larry Scott, one of the best friends in the whole world, even repeated it. They didn't realize what he said to me. But it reminded me of that moment. When I'm driving home, I'm in Virginia. I'm trying to get back to Georgia because I'm tired. I've been up there for months and months and months with no sleep. And I'm wrecked. And I'm driving. I'm like, why were they doing that? And what they were telling me was the same thing you've been telling me all my life. What we have here today is a problem. What we had that day was a catastrophe. And none of us could do this and fix this by ourselves. But collectively, we, the first word of the first step, we got this. We had that, we'll have this. If I've got 1,000 problems and one of them's alcoholism, I've got 1 problem. When I do this and I seek the solution of a higher power that I choose to call God, I work on that relationship, the romance works out, the finance works out, the bills get paid, the job gets done, I don't go without. I work on this, that happens. How do I do that? I work with others. Not to feel the way I used to feel. I help them do the work the way I was shown how to do the work rapidly, quickly, completely, and get that person to a place of service immediately so we don't lose our newcomers sitting on their asses waiting to play. And all my problems, all my little bull gets taken care of on its own. The first word of the first step is the most important word of the entire deal. And then I learned about love, patience, and tolerance, which you guys have exhibited so wonderfully tonight. Thanks for having me.
I told you. Something else. Thank you, Gene. Thank you very much. I've asked none other than Rusty Jones to come up and give a chant. And I did that before the meeting started.
I'm Rusty Jones. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. Thank you, Gene. Adequate. Here at the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting, we have a chip system. Alcoholics Anonymous does not have a chip system. If you're coming in and coming back sick and tired of being sick and tired of paying high cost of low living, want to try a new way of life one day at a time, come get a white chip. After 30 days, you get the crushed aluminum. Nothing silver about it. Don't take my word for that. Try pawning it. 30 days for the silver aluminum. Anybody else for the crushed aluminum? 90 days for the red badge of courage. Anybody else for the red? 90 days. 6 months for the gold. Nothing yellow about one of us staying sober 6 months. 9 months for the green, the gold chip, the blue chip. 1 year multiples thereof. Anybody with an anniversary tonight?
I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. Everybody, this is 5 years. Thank you. Thank you, Gene. I, too, am a recovered Texan. And I, too, am a habitual violator, and I picked up my first white chip in a sister fellowship in 1991. And I want to remind the folks that picked up 30 and 60 days, 90 days, that it shouldn't take 24 years to pick up a 5-year chip unless you just love pain. All right, pain will go away. Simple as that. One day at a time. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name's Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Thank you, Gene, so much for telling your story tonight. I thought I had heard it before, but I think I just heard the short version. That was really great. Thank you. And I'm also a Texan. Isn't that funny? A lot of drinking going on in Texas. And I'm glad to be here in Georgia, too. Picked up my white chip here at NAVA. Back about 10 years ago, and I'll tell you, this group, you know, has meant a lot to me, this facility, and a lot of people in this group have just really helped me so much, so thank y'all so much, and I'm truly here by the grace of God. Gene and I share a meeting once a week, and I was that person who had, you know, 1 foot in and 1 foot out just a few short years ago. I'd hit my bottom in this meet, in this program, sober. And he would tell me when I'd, you know, when I'd go up and talk to him, he'd say, "We really need you here." And, you know, that kept me coming back to that group. And I feel, you know, so much a part of AA today, you know, and it's through working these steps and really getting into the middle of it and, you know, in doing what the steps tell you to do, giving it back to other people, you know, clearing that past, you know, that I just couldn't let go of. And I'm just really grateful for it today. And something else that somebody told me, you know, that really helped me is that, you know, I deserve support. And I did not believe that, you know, and I deserve a sponsor. So if you don't have a sponsor, you know, get a sponsor. You know, have somebody help you work these steps. I was also, you know, taught to go to like a big book study, 12 and 12 studies, and really get in the middle of this book. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you,
Any other blue chips? Any reconsideration on the white chip? Congratulations on the chips you're holding.
All right, congratulations, everybody.
Someone, but I lose.